Good morning, everyone. Coming to you live from somewhere in the Middle East, it is Saturday morning's hottest streaming media political talk show, Inside the Eye Live with The Fedge. Did I just hear someone tell a standing member of Congress that if it were up to them, they would dump the Israelis tomorrow? Sounds like something you might hear right here on Inside the Eye Live.
The Fetch. What a man. Oh, my God. You have to listen to that show. He was brilliant. Absolutely. I didn't know he had gonads of steel like that and a mind like a frigging razor. I didn't realize he was so clear. He cut through this, that cognitive dissonance that is going on in the whole Patriot music movement.
And now it's time for Inside the Eye Live, intelligent media for the politically aware.
And happy Saturday. It is Saturday, August 17th, 2019, and you are listening to Inside the Eye Live with Mr. Dennis Fetcho. I'm your guest host, Frederick C. Blackburn. I'd like to welcome everyone to the show today. And shout out to Mr. Fetcho for giving it the old college try. We have been testing this line all morning, and he has done everything possible to try to get the connection. We were connected there for just a minute, but the line quality was so bad, he was not able to hold up the connection. So he asked me to fill in, and so I'm here, and I hope you can all hear me. If I can get some feedback in the chat room. You can join us in the chat room at insidetheeyelive.chatango.com. That's insidetheeyelive.chatango.com. Or you can go out to the insidetheeyelive.com website and go into the chat room for there. So sorry that the Fetch couldn't do the show. I'm sure he has plenty of news. Was really looking forward to hearing his analysis on not only the world situation, but everything that's going on with him and reestablishing in the Philippines. So hopefully he'll be able to work with the tech crews there and be up by Thursday's show. That's one of the things before I got blacklisted. I was doing international tech support, and I was one of those convergence engineers that was trying to bring in, at the time, third generation telephony, where we were merging the telephone networks and the computer networks. And you really get spoiled in countries like the United States and Canada and the UK and France, et cetera, at the quality of our telecommunications grid, especially in the United States. I don't want to, you know, brag too much on the home team here, especially after that illegal electronic surveillance thing that our telcos did against us. But, you know, the original telcos, back when it was white guys that were actually Americans running the telecommunication grid, we had what was called the five nines, where you had to have 99.999% reliability. And when you do the math on that, that, you know, calculates out to just minutes per year of downtime that the telecommunication grid was allowed to be down. And so the FCC in the early days of telephone, you know, jurists really said this has to be fully reliable. So it was designed to military specifications. And so you get used to that level of quality. And then when, you know, I graduated to the international scene of telecommunications engineering, it was a rude awakening that you get into some of these countries. And like Mr. Fetcho was saying, it's literally Dixie cups and rubber bands, masquerading as a telecommunication grid. And the, you know, telecommunication grids in these countries is as unreliable as the electrical grid, where you've got rolling blackouts all the time. And you have to have, your own generators on site, because you never know when the state run power is going to go out. And that was part of the thing I had to learn to design communications gear for these third world countries, et cetera. Especially, I did a lot of work down in the Caribbean, from, you know, Jamaica to Trinidad, and you had to design the engine, you know, the generators that could power your communication grids, because you could not rely on the, you know, state power. And then the other aspect is, you know, you could not rely on the telecommunication grid. This stuff was constantly going out, not within any specs, a lot of interoperability problems, where, you know, in the United States, we had our standards of, you know, has to meet this. But in some of these countries, they are trying to do a mismatch or a mix up of all these different vendors' gear. And, you know, one of the things about communications gear is you have very strict standards around the world. The United States was called a T1 standard, and most of the rest of the world was on an E1 standard. And so you get into this third world countries and trying to make everything work and realize that they, you know, had some bizarre combination of the two signaling formats, because that's the gear that they bought, and, you know, the state bought for whatever reason. And so it was a nightmare. So I definitely can, appreciate what the Fetch is up against in the Philippines. And it's interesting, as he's saying in the chat room, that, you know, the telecommunication grid in Jordan was much more reliable and up to date than the Philippines. And you really wouldn't think that. One of the things that I ran into doing work in the Middle East, was most of your gear was going over wireless towers rather than cables, because it was just a nightmare trying to get the permits to trench cabling in so much of the Middle East, especially around Israel and Palestine, because everything is a historic area. I mean, you dig down 4 feet to lay a cable and you're going to hit something, find a, you know, pottery shard or something, and suddenly the whole dig gets cut down or shut down until you can get an archaeological crew in there to see what was there before you can continue digging. And it just got cost prohibitive. You couldn't keep up with deadlines. So you just saw this trend of everything going over the towers, which had its own bag of problems. But anyway, so I appreciate all the hard work the Fetch did to try to get the connection. And we had it up there for a minute, you know, but it was just so garbled and unstable. But it was good that he could come in and check in with the crew this morning. And like I said, he is in the chat room. So anyway, I don't know. The last two times I've taken the show, I have not been able to hear the studio back in my headphones, so I would not getting the bump music going into the breaks. And so, going into the first break here in a second. So I'll see if I'm getting something from the studio, but, if I don't, I'm going to be flying blind again this time. So if the chat room can help me out, keeping up with the bump music, I would appreciate it. Don't want to be talking over my breaks and such, but, anyway, lots going on, this week, so we've got a lot of news to talk about, and of course we'll have the cat report and the Oy Vey moment next section, and then for the end, section in the third hour, I brought another card trick for you, so continue with my tradition of bringing a card trick with me when I guest host for the Fetch. So I'll have a card trick for you in the third hour. And all right, you are listening to Inside the Eye Live with Mr. Dennis Fetcho. I'm your guest host, Frederick C. Blackburn. I hope everyone's having a wonderful Saturday out there. appreciate Revolution Radio and the Fetch having me on today. I was sorry that the Fetch couldn't get his lines sorted out to do the show. We were all looking forward to that. But anyway, just a reminder that this is listener-supported radio. We in the new media rely on you, the listeners, to keep us on the air. And Revolution Radio and Mr. Fetcho's Inside the Eye Live is all about listener-sponsored radio. And we need your support. And for those of you who still have resource, just keep in mind that our adversaries have unlimited budget in their war against truth. And one of their biggest tools is lying by omission. It's the stories that they don't cover that are so important. And then, of course, the way they leave details out of the stories they do cover. And it's independent radio that fills in those missing dots that paint a completely different picture. And we can't do it without a listener support. And there's big bucks to be made of professional liars. I mean, you look at networks like CNN, Echo, 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 MSNBC, Echo, 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 ABC, Echo, 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 CBS, Echo, Echo, Echo. And those people are there to sell an agenda. They don't report the news. They emote the news. They tell you who's good, who's bad. And so they just claim this air of moral, ethical, and intellectual superiority and are basically reducing what used to be journalism to psychological warfare. And we really saw this after 9/11. It's always been part of media. I think as soon as media was established, there were people that says we can weaponize this just like anything else. Any advance in technology, you always have that group that says, how can we weaponize this? And so much of our media in the United States has been completely weaponized against us in favor of this globo homo white genocide Kalergi plan New World Order agenda. And so it's so blatant now. So people are saying, we understand that fake news, enemy of the people, is lying to us. Where can we go to get real information? We are now waking up. That's the Great Awakening. People are waking up and they are wanting the truth. So it's up to providers like us to bring out all those missing data dots and say, here, connect these dots and see the pattern. Like we always say in my show, The Breakfast Club, connect the dots, see the patterns, connect the patterns and see the system dynamics. And so you start seeing this general pattern and you realize that whether you like it or not, you are at war, but it's a different type of war. This is fourth generation asymmetrical warfare, and it's a completely different way of fighting. And like Sun Tzu always said, the supreme art of war is to win without having to fight. I'm paraphrasing, but that idea of not having to resort to a battlefield condition and still winning. And this is so much of fourth and fifth generation warfare. And the distinction I make with fifth generation is, not only do you have drone technology, but you also have artificial intelligence technologies. And we see, we'll be talking later on today about the Project Veritas and how they're using artificial intelligence to do machine learning to push an agenda. That they are saying, we are the right thinkers, we are the commissars, we are the polar trucks, and you will think this way, and anything that goes against this narrative, we're going to bury it and ban those people. We're going to shut it down. And so this is why listener-supported radio is so important. We're out there trying to get the news out, but we're catching the flack from all of this artificial intelligence. It's amazing, you know, how many of us are having our websites taken down, our YouTube videos deleted, or put it in a restricted state, our tweets deleted, you know, our Facebook pages deleted for those of you who do Facebook, et cetera. But, you know, there's definitely a war on truth out there. And so the ITEL CAT report is proudly sponsored by North Kakalaki Trading Post, good services and solutions for all creatures great and small. And we're inconveniently located at the corner of Walk and Don't Walk. And by Blackbird Nine's Breakfast Club, a show hosted every Wacky Wednesday from 8 to 10 p.m. on the Spreaker Network, on Eurofolk, and also 107 FM in Australia now. Shout out to Mr. Sean Surplus for carrying the show to the Southern Cross crew and all the good folks at Eurofolk Radio. And also, you know, they also are carrying several of the shows from Revolution Radio. So, you know, we are getting the word out. But this week's CAT report, coming from the mountains of the Appalachian Mountains here in the high country, one of my crew has had to have surgery this week, and of course, their cat. You know, it's always interesting when animals know something is up, and they're so intuitive. And so the Mr. Oscar has just really been in total, you know, nurse mode. He's playing Nurse Nightingale and just trying to be there for the crew member who's having to have eye surgery this week. And so I've been camping out there in the that's one of the things. If I sound a little tired today, I apologize. I've been in a night nurse mode for the last few nights, sleeping in the recliner. So between me and Mr. Oscar, you know, we've been taking care of the crew member. And so it's pretty funny that, you know, this cat is just say, you know, well, why are you still here? You know, it's late night. You're not supposed to be here. And just keep checking on me as well as checking on just staying right with the crew member that had the surgery. And it's just amazing to me, you know, the animals I've had, and they always know when you're sick or healing, and they just stay right with you. And especially if you've got any kind of wound, they're always trying to clean it for you, like you're one of their babies. And it's one of the things that they know exactly where the wound is. And so one of the things we've been having to do is to keep the cat from trying to clean the eye wound where the surgery was. And it's like, no, we, you know, appreciate the offer, but, you know, no, but they just keep trying to get up there and keep it clean. They know that there's a wound and it's time to keep it clean, right? And so that's been interesting that I've been tag teaming this recovery surgery with Mr. Oscar, and he has been, you know, just the ideal person you would want on your crew if you've got a crew member down. Anyway, so that is the ITEL CAT report from the high country of North Kakalaki, and it is proudly sponsored by North Kakalaki Trading Post, good services and solutions for all creatures great and small, and by Blackbird Nine's Breakfast Club. I'm your host, your host, Frederick C. Blackburn, and I do a show every Wacky Wednesday from 8 to 10 p.m. And you can go out to blackbird9tradingpost.org. And that, again, that's blackbird9tradingposts, plural.org. Or you can just go to any search engine and type in Blackbird 9, you know, Blackbird and the number 9, and you will find us. My producer is an artist, graphic artist, and video guy, and just all around technical guru, my wrench guy, as we say, is Golden Pipe Wrench, and he is the master at seeding search engines. So if you go out looking for Blackbird 9 in the Trading Post, you will find us, because we are in all the search engines at the top now. So despite all their efforts to keep us down, you know, we are, you know, able to use that same technology to keep us out, you know, up at the top of the searches. Now, this week's ITEL Oy Vey moment, and I'm not sure who's sponsoring the Oy Vey moment this weekend. My apologies. So many great people have sponsored the Oy Vey moment that are in the truth community. And so just a shout out to all of them. You know who you are. And I guess the Oy Vey moment will have to be, you know, this continuation of the Jeffrey Epstein story. It just gets more and more bizarre every day. And it's fascinating just as an analysis of the propaganda of this, that you have something hitting the media cycle and you can see this Talpiot Unit 8200 Mockingbird fake news media, both the old media, the newsprint, the magazines, the newspapers, radio, television, as well as Twitter and Google and Facebook and YouTube, all trying their best to get ahead of the story and deflect it away from certain facts. And that is what's so key, is, you know, those stubborn facts. And you keep seeing all of this push towards, you know, there's nothing to see here. He just committed suicide. And then you see such a push for the Clinton Arkansas mafia connections. But what you're not seeing is all of the Israeli Mossad connections, you know, the Talpiot Unit 8200 groups and the Mossad, especially with the connections between Jeffrey Epstein and Ehud Barak. And you know, that is being pushed down the memory hole that, you know, oh, there's nothing to see here. And so to me, it's looking more and more like this was a global intelligence operation designed to entrap and blackmail world leaders and world celebrities. You know, those thought leaders, you know, our celebrities, everybody always follows those stars. It's like, you know, ooh, you know, what does such and such think about this? They're my idol. You know, I follow them. So what do they think? So they call this, you know, a thought leader. And so you've got this, you know, inner clique of people that are on all these Jeffrey Epstein, you know, Pleasure Island manifests, you know, where we have the records of, you know, this is, you know, the who's who of the world that were taking part in this. And we see that this facility had cameras and microphones hidden everywhere. So it was very obvious this was a very sophisticated blackmail, bribery and blackmail. And so, you know, I always talk about the five B's of the Meany method. And, you know, it's bully, bribe, blackmail, banish, and bury. And so this idea of, you know, bribing somebody, it's like that. We talk a lot about dark currency. What do you want? Anything you want, we can get for you. And if it happens to be, you know, small children that you want to, you know, have your way with, et cetera, we can arrange that. And this is one of the other things that they keep deflecting away. They keep referring to Jeffrey Epstein's product line, if you will, as young women. And it's like, no, these were not young women. These were children. There is a big difference. because they keep trying to say, oh, well, they were like 17-year-old, you know, and that's legal in many countries. Well, there were these 16-year-olds, but that's still legal in many countries. And there were these 15-year-olds and 14-year-olds. And, you know, but all of a sudden you get down to all of this data that it goes all the way down to the infant level. You know, this is child abuse. And that is one of the big things they keep trying to deflect away from with this story. And now the I guess the weirdest part of this Oy Vey moment with Jeffrey Epstein has come out with this artist who, in one of Jeffrey Epstein's many mansions, had this painting of Bill Clinton in the infamous blue dress that we associate with Monica Lewinsky and that whole shakedown, and wearing the red shoes. And so one of the symbols, their symbols will be their downfall. One of the symbols of this hidden hand cabal is the Red Shoes Club. And so we see all these pictures of these, you know, people from Bill Meyer, et cetera, to this painting of Bill Clinton in drag wearing the red shoes. And there's the same artist had another painting of President George W. Bush on the floor playing with paper airplanes and building blocks, with the inference that these two planes tore down this tower of building blocks that he had put together. And trying to find the article here, but while I'm looking for it, the thing that struck me so much, which is the Oy Vey of this, is this artist. One of the patterns in all of her artwork is to have the people drawn with six fingers instead of five. And we know from our Kabbalistic studies, six is a huge number to these people. Six is that number of perfection. It's that number of the alpha male, the perfected man, etc., the god man, the demigod man. But it's interesting that drawing, when you're learning to draw, hands are very, very hard to draw. If you draw a hand with four fingers and one thumb, most of the time it looks weird. It looks out of proportion. And so a lot of animators will cheat. If you look at most cartoons, they always show the characters with three fingers and a thumb. And that, for whatever reason in our psyche, that seems to look correct. But if you do four fingers and a thumb, it looks weird. And like I said, when you're learning to draw, and drawing hands is very, very difficult. So it's very strange to me that this artist would choose to draw all of these figures, important people, with six fingers. And one of the things that I immediately thought of was in the late 60s, the Beatles released the Yellow Submarine movie, which was a full-length animation film from United Artists. And the meanies, the blue meanies, which were the bad guys attacking Pepperland, all had six fingers. And so this idea of, the meanie, the blue meanies, and, when you look at the symbolism of who the blue meanies were, and then look at who our adversaries are and the different aspects of this global New World Order agenda, from, the Freemasons to the Illuminati to all these B'nai B'rith, ADL type, organizations, and the media, corrupted media, et cetera. You see these different groups symbolized in the various legions of the Blue Meanie Army. One of the things that's very striking is all of the meanies had six fingers. So that was very interesting to me in that movie then. And so when I saw these paintings from this so-called artist that Jeffrey Epstein seemed to be so enamored with, she's painting all of these people with six fingers. So, yeah, there's definitely some signaling going there of this number six. So anyway, that is the Oy Vey moment here at Inside the Eye Live. And again, it is all about listener sponsored radio. You know, we have to talk about cooperation if we're going to win this thing. You know, like I said, whether you like it or not, you're at war. And if it has been thrust upon you, it's best to have the idea that you're going to win it. And so if we are going to win against this adversary, we have to cooperate. And one of the biggest ways to cooperate is to support each other. And so this is all about listener-sponsored radio. And again, people like, you know, Nighthawk at Revolution Radio, you know, they work night and day keeping that network going. The Troll Slayer, Dennis Fetcho, we see how dedicated he is. He works full time, you know, has a life, but yet he is out there all the time working on his shows. And he does, you know, the Thursday night show, ITEL Primetime. And he does the Saturday show, and he also does the weekly Friday show. I think he's still doing that with Mr. Andrew Carrington Hitchcock. So the man is just a workhorse. And, you know, so these are the people, you know, we need to support. And I appreciate all the support people show my show. So, like I said, it all depends on you. It's so important that, you know, you cooperate. So please go out to the Inside the Eye Live page. There's a place you can donate. Please go out to revolution.radio. There's a place where you can donate there to keep that network on. And if you feel saucy and you want to go over to the Trading Post site, we do have a donate section there where you can donate via credit card, PayPal, etc. to the Breakfast Club and help us keep the lights on there. So you are listening to Inside the Eye Live Saturday show with your guest host, Frederick C. Blackburn, filling in for The Fetch. And we will be back after these messages. All right, we're back. You're listening to Inside the Eye Live with Mr. Dennis Fetcho. I'm your guest host, Frederick C. Blackburn, filling in for the Troll Slayer today. If you weren't here the first hour, the Fetch gave it the old college try, as we used to say, but he just could not get a stable enough connection to be able to do the show. He was connected, but he was dropping out, and it was just really garbled. So I'm filling in, and hopefully we'll have him up and running for Thursday's show. But I'm here in North Carolina, or North Kakalaki, as we say, somewhere in the Appalachian Mountains. And I always say, you know, we are at the front lines of this culture war that we're talking about. And it is amazing to see the changes in my lifetime in the state of North Carolina from the 60s and seeing the effects of the 64 civil rights, 65 immigration, and 68 fair housing acts, and what they have done to North Carolina, especially our major cities. And if you're not familiar with this part of the U.S., North Carolina is on the East Coast. It is below Virginia, above South Carolina, and we're to the east of Tennessee and Kentucky. And our major cities are Charlotte, North Carolina, which is both a trucking hub and a banking hub of the world, especially Bank of America. And we'll be talking about them here in a few minutes. And then our capital city is Raleigh, North Carolina, named after Sir Walter Raleigh. And then we have Durham, Chapel Hill, which has UNC, Chapel Hill, Durham has Duke University. Then we have Winston-Salem, we have Greensboro, and Wilmington. And so those are pretty much the major cities in the state. And of course, Asheville, over there in the western part of the state. And one of the things that I have seen in this push with the Calergi plan and the Cloward-Piven plan in North Carolina since 9/11, it just really became apparent to me, all these changes after 9/11. 9/11 was the big wake-up call for me. I was the total libtard until 9/11. And you know, you really see that there has been this full-on push against the southern states, especially what is considered the Bible Belt. You know, the southern states like North Carolina and Virginia and South Carolina, Georgia, Alabama, Mississippi, Florida, Louisiana, you know, those are considered the Bible Belt states. And you have to remember our adversaries, part of their end game is, you know, you can go through and see how Rothschild and Weishaupt designed their Illuminati model, and how this got refined through Karl Marx and his communist model. And you know, just all of the people that have come after Marx, especially people like Calergi, who said not only will the man of the future be a mongrel, where all people are going to mix into this generic brown race, and then we'll have a special royal Jewish caste ruling the planet, and that's the Calergi master-slave model. And he also said we're going to accomplish this by having mass immigration into white nations to destroy white people. And then you have the Cloward-Piven plan from 1968 at Columbia University. Two Jewish communist professors decided that, you know, the way to destroy the Constitutional Republic of the United States is to overstress its infrastructure, be it the welfare systems, the aid programs, education systems, and just the, you know, basic infrastructure, your telecommunication grids, your roadways, your water plants, your sewage treatment plants, by just putting in more people than those systems can handle. Then they're going to break down, and then you can replace them with this new world order. And this is that problem reaction solution model we see with all of this, you know, communist Jewish, you know, intellectual planning. And it's also right out of Saul Alinsky's Rules for Radicals, where he says, you know, the first rule of community organizing is community disorganizing. You destroy what's there and replace it with something new. And so this goes way, way back in this model. Even the, you know, Knight Templars, you know, described how their techniques of order out of chaos. You create chaos to destroy the old system, and then you bring in the new system. And so it's no mystery that, you know, just like the Jews being thrown out of, you know, hundreds of countries over the last 2,000 years, the Knight Templars were also shut down, but they reemerged as the Freemasons. And it's the same model, to protect and serve this Jewish elite, you know, New World Order model that's going to be ruled from Greater Israel under Pax Judaica, Jewish peace. And it's all based on Talmudic Noahide law, and there's no such thing as rights in Talmudic Noahide law. You know, they see our constitutional republic system of a peer-to-peer system of individual rights as, you know, ridiculous. It's just, you know, they've decided it won't work, and, you know, their model is ordained by their God. And, you know, they're doing God's work. And so they are in this Maccabee zealotry, think they are fixing the world. And they have this word, you know, tikkun olam, that, you know, it is to fix the world, because all you white people broke it. Our Western civilization supposedly broke the world. So they're here to destroy that Western civilization and replace it with their new world order, their Pax Judaica. And I'm against it. Because, you know, one of the things that the Freemasons don't understand is there's no place for white Europeans, especially white Christian Europeans, in the New World Order. You know, you're building a temple that you will not be part of. So this is, we talk about the symbolism of Hiram Abiff, you know, that the in the third degree of Freemasonry, he's the only, you know, non-Jew in the whole passion play there, and he gets killed at as the temple is nearing completion. And so that idea of the Sun King, we talk about the Sun King must die. In the Jewish Talmud, it talks about, you know, the best of the Goyim must be killed. And you know, basically you decapitate a system, you take out its leadership, and then the people, you know, have to have leadership, and so they will accept your leadership, even though it's this despotic tyranny. But, you know, that is the mindset, is you destroy what's there, cut off the head of the existing leadership, and then they will follow you into this new world order. And, you know, the end games are, again, you know, the destruction of Christianity, the destruction of all nation states, and this idea of a one world government. And this is their end game. And so they are pushing this long-term game. You're playing the long game here. That's one of the things you have to get your head around, is this has been going on for a very long time. I always talk about, you know, in 30 AD, Jesus Christ is crucified, and in 70 AD, the temple at Jerusalem is destroyed, and that war never ended. You know, those are the two fish going in different directions. You know, over the last 2,000 years, we have, as Europeans, this idea of civilization, and they have a completely different view, and that we stand in the way of their objectives. And so North Carolina is at the forefront of this culture war. And what we've seen after 9/11 is all of these carpetbagger Jews moving into these southern towns, large cities, and small rural communities, like here in Watauga County, and basically just taking over the place. They are using outside money to shift elections, getting their candidates, their carpetbagging candidates in place, and voting all the old power system out of office. And so you just see this huge power shift at every level of society here in North Carolina. And just one of the other things they do is set up these NGO groups that are basically fourth-generation warfare front ends to bring in the third world into these countries to change the demographic of the area. And so we have just been inundated with Mexicans, Arabs, you know, Africans, et cetera, into North Carolina. And it's all at the hands of these Jewish groups. And one of the things they're using is the black community through the NAACP, which was a Jewish organization. You know, people don't realize that, that the NAACP, when it started at the beginning of the 20th century, you know, it was all Jewish leadership. And what it was a way to organize Jews and radicalize them against the existing organize blacks against the existing white Christian populations, especially in the South. And this led the seedbed for the so-called civil rights movement. And we see now the parallels between what was going on in South Africa and what was going on in the U.S. South. They had Nelson Mandela, we had Martin Luther King, but it's basically the same model. And so one of the things here in North Carolina, the patterns is every one of these areas, the Jews have come in, and self-hating whites, so-called progressive, cosmopolitan, you know, carpet-bagging white people, and elected black sheriffs in all of these counties that contain our major cities. And then you have a, you know, the model is then either a black mayor of the major city or a Jewish mayor of the major city. And so this is a huge seat of power. That sheriff in that county, if you have somebody who is compromised, you know, that is a major problem. And always remember Trotsky's model his key for the Bolshevik Revolution success was to weaponize the police against the people, because like he said, governments come and go, but the police remain. The police are there to enforce the law, no matter what the law is. That's what you have to get your head around, is police are there to enforce the law. So if you have a law that says, suddenly white people are bad and have no vote, no voice, the police are going to enforce that. They're going to shut you down. And so we see this all over North Carolina, where you're getting this power shift, and all of these police chiefs and sheriffs are being put in place by this Jewish power system and are turning everybody against white people. But they're doing it under this moral authority of diversity and inclusion. Those are the buzzwords. It's like, you have to embrace diversity. You have to have inclusive. Everybody's welcome here in the United States. Love your neighbor. And anybody who stands up against that is immediately tagged as a bad person. That, you are a white supremacist. You're a Nazi. You're a Klan member. All these other, demonizing terms of people who say, I just want my nation to be what it was. It was a constitutional republic designed for European peoples. In the 60s, we got sucker punched into this equality communist dogma that, the educators, sold us on this big lie of everybody is equal. The only thing about race is purely cosmetic, that this is, you just look differently, but inside everybody's the same, implying that everybody has the same intelligence quotient, emotional quotient, and I call temporal quotient, the concept of time. And this is just not true. And they knew it wasn't true when they hoisted it upon us. And so my generation, those crazy boomers, we spent a lifetime trying to make this work, only to be found that it wasn't designed to work. It was designed to fail, and that we got completely set up, and it was never designed to fail. But now it's at such a point where I am in my hometown where I grew up, where generations of my family have lived since colonial times, and we are now demonized as the bad people by this progressive left communist mindset. They look at us as, this is the problem to be fixed. And so here, for example, the university, we have Appalachian State University, and after 9/11, they got a new chancellor, Chancellor Sherry Jezebel Everts, who came in with the express purpose to fix the white problem of ASU, that ASU was too white. Now, she said it was to bring diversity to ASU and up our diversity numbers, but no, they basically weaponized that university into bringing in the third world and bringing in non-whites to this part of the Appalachian Mountains. And then at the same time, we got a synagogue and we got a Holocaust center at the university that is basically a base for Antifa activities, that they bring in Antifa people to do training, and they set up all of these NGO groups around the county that do nothing but bring the third world in to change the demographics of this area to make whites, white Christians, a minority, and push, the racial diversity, then push the LGBTQPC agenda, and the globo homo agenda. And one of the things, when she took power, Appalachian's website, was changed to say that Appalachian was there to mold students into global citizens. They are completely anti-nationalism, anti-Christian, and have just got this globo homo agenda, and they make no bones about it. They are right there in the open saying, we are here to make global citizens and embrace diversity and basically fix the white problem, fix the Christian problem, fix the patriot problem of those Appalachian mountains. And they are just like zealot Maccabees. And if you dare try to have any sense of patriotism, nationalism, you are now demonized. And it's interesting that my father, who was a World War II veteran who did his undergrad and graduate work at ASU and worked within the college system for his professional career after the military, you know, he would be banned from ASU's campus probably under their No Hate App State policy, which came in after Charlottesville, that when Antifa at ASU basically said that Identity Europa is a hate group and is banned from campus. So they actually banned an identity group from Appalachian campus by branding them a hate group. They brought in the ADL, the SPLC, the NAACP to back them up. The local paper, which is no longer a local paper, it was also bought up by the same cabal, the Adams Publishing Group. And they're just the echo chamber for everything ASU does to push this globo homo agenda. And so everybody was fine that the people, the demographic that built this town, you know, people like Daniel Boone, the frontier mountaineer who helped colonize these mountains, and, you know, the people who built the university are now considered the enemy of that same power system. And so this is, you know, a just complete turning on its head of the community here, where the old community is now, you know, the enemy. And they actually train these students and radicalize these students against us. And they're using the university as a voting center to radicalize these students and then register them to vote and send them out to vote. Also radicalizing students to get them in these NGO groups to go out and get all of these third worlders, invaders, registered to vote, and then get them to all the polling stations. And then we have massive election fraud on top of this, where it's obvious people are voting multiple times in multiple precincts and using fake registrations on the top of everything else. But it's all about singling out the existing white Christian patriotic community, identifying them and taking them out and replacing them with the carpet-bagging progressives and usually non-whites. And so one of the results here coming out of Charlotte last night was, this is coming out of News Maven. It says ICE, you know, this is our Immigration Customs Enforcement agency that handles, you know, dealing with people who are in the country illegally. It says ICE arrests illegal immigrant rape suspect in Charlotte, North Carolina, that sheriff released. And it says ICE is blasting the Mecklenburg County Sheriff's Office for releasing a rape suspect in Charlotte. ICE rearrested the suspect. In August 2019, U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement arrested Oscar Leonardo, 33, in Charlotte, North Carolina. Oscar is a Honduran national and illegally present in the United States. Oscar is accused of raping a child. And this is, you know, using that age-old weapon of rape to demoralize and destroy a people. It's like you are bringing in rapists and murderers and, you know, criminals into these areas, and you're acting like they're, you know, poor refugees just looking for the American dream. And you'd be a bad person if you denied them, you know, the privileges that you have and all that white privilege, white guilt on top of this. But, you know, these are foot soldiers. They are here to destroy you, your way of life, your nation, and they should be treated as such. And here we find out that McFadden, who is the sheriff in Mecklenburg County, says that he will not honor ICE detainees. So he is turning Charlotte, North Carolina, the home of Bank of America, echo, 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 one of the largest Jewish populations in the Southeast, is Charlotte, North Carolina, and they have completely turned it into a non-white city. And they have a black sheriff. And when you do some research on this Sheriff Gary McFadden, you see that he was one of these black men who was put in place by out-of-town, out-of-state, out-of-country money with the backing of the NAACP, the Obama administration, et cetera, to put him in a position of power. And now he's coming out and saying that he is not going to cooperate with our immigration officials over these enemy hostiles. And so this idea of protecting, so we just back to that, you know, key to Trotsky's revolution is weaponizing the police against the people. And he's sitting there holding the moral high ground that, you know, he's protecting these dreamers and refugees that are just looking for a better way of life. And it's like, no, you are harboring invaders and criminals and enemy combatants per the Patriot Act. Yeah, that's one of the things. They put in this Patriot Act, and it's like, okay, all of these people, you know, that are doing this stuff are classified as enemy combatants and should be treated as such. But in Mecklenburg, North Carolina, they are being protected. And we're seeing this all throughout all these progressive cities where they have done the same cookie cutter model where they go in, put their people in power, and then have the police stand down as the population is being overrun and anybody by these invaders, and anybody who dares speaks up is then demonized as the bad person, that, oh, you are a white supremacist, you are, you know, a white nationalist. Now they're even demonizing, you know, white nationalism, that, you know, you are a nationalist, that is a bad thing, supposedly. And just trying to make us out to be bad people for wanting to protect our homelands and our way of life and Western civilization, because we see what the end game is. So anyway, you are listening to Inside the Eye Live to Mr. Dennis Fetcho. I'm your guest host, Frederick C. Blackford, and we will be back after these messages.
Right back after this message.
All right. We are back. You're listening to Inside the Eye Live with Mr. Dennis Fetcho. I'm your guest host, Frederick C. Blackburn, a.k.a. Blackbird 9, filling in for the Fetch today, who just couldn't quite get enough bandwidth coming out of the Philippines to do the show, but at least he was able to check in and say hi. So we're all thinking about you, the Fetch, and hopefully you'll have everything up and working by Thursday's show. He's got quite the crew out there, it sounds like. When I was talking to him yesterday, he was talking about having the site engineer out looking at the lines and the salesperson out looking at the lines and trying to come up with a solution. And they didn't know if they'd have something in place by today, but unfortunately it didn't quite come together. So I got tapped to fill in. So I appreciate y'all having me today and spending your Saturday with me. We were talking before the break about the Queen City here in North Kakalaki of Charlotte, and that used to be such a symbol of pride in North Carolina, you know, that our city of Charlotte was a beautiful southern city, like Raleigh was, you know, back in the day, like Greensboro and Winston were back in the day, and now, you know, they are basically doing to Charlotte what they did to London, what they did to Paris, you know, where it is a no longer a white city. It's definitely no longer a Christian city. And this is coming out of Charlotte that today is the Bank of America Charlotte Pride Parade. And that has nothing to do with being proud of Charlotte's history. This is about celebrating this degenerate LGBTQ PC agenda, which, you know, always remember that, you know, in this nation, homosexuality is not only considered mental illness up until the 1970s, but in most states was considered criminal because of the predatory nature of the beast. They always say, we're just like you, we just have a different sexual preference, love is love, etc. And it's like, no, this is a degenerate predatory system. It's degenerate because it does not produce anything. You don't produce offspring. So this system has to survive by recruiting new people. And when you start looking at the statistics of, you know, what was the turning point when somebody decides they're gay, you have an incredibly high percentage of sexual abuse as children. And these are the facts, and those facts used to be recognized. But Jewish power, the Jewish psychological institutes, put so much political pressure on these psychiatric groups in the 1970s, where they were able to force them by basically gangland methods of threats and intimidation, rather than by any change in science, to reclassify the DSM manual, which was the Directory of Known Mental Disorders. This is called the DSM, and had homosexuality removed as a mental illness. And from that point on, they did these typical cultural Marxists playing the victim aggressor by saying, oh, homosexuals have been persecuted unfairly all these years, we just want to be accepted, and holding Christians up to their own book of rules. And again, that's one of Saul Alinsky's axioms, is make your enemy live up to its own book of rules. And so, you know, by coming up with these propaganda phrases, these control phrases, Pavlovian control phrases, like, love is love, love has no number, you know, trying to normalize pedophilia, have managed to convince, by hook or crook, Christian communities into being accepting of this homosexual agenda. And now they are going on the aggressive, you know, and attacking the churches and attacking the Christians and attacking the straight people. You know, now being white and straight is a sign of toxic masculinity. And this is what they teach at universities. And so you're seeing this LGBTQ PC community as being the victim, and the white Christians are the aggressors, the people that are keeping them down, et cetera, and they're the victims. And then you have the social justice warriors out as the enablers. You know, we're the rescuers. We're your allies. We'll stand with you against, you know, these people that are keeping you down. And it's a way to attack the church, attack Christianity, attack the nation, the communities, etc. So it's interesting to me that Bank of America, one of the largest banks in the world, which is, you know, based in Charlotte, North Carolina, is hosting the Charlotte Pride Parade. And when you look at Bank of America, it is completely Jewish hierarchy. You know, and again, Charlotte now has one of the largest Jewish populations of any southern city. And so you've got all these and some very powerful synagogues down there, and they're all coordinating this in the city of Charlotte. And you've got all of these non-whites going along with this in Charlotte. And Bank of America also bought the huge stadium that the sports teams like the Carolina Panthers play in, et cetera. And so, you know, it's amazing how much power Bank of America has, and they are using that power to completely change the demographics of the city and Mecklenburg County. And so today, they are promoting this big pride parade in Charlotte, and they've had this week of pride. And it's amazing how much my Twitter feed has just been overrun with Bank of America Pride Week Charlotte, Bank of America Pride Week Charlotte. And it's like, you know, why, and we saw this, you know, during the so-called Pride Month, all of these corporations just getting on board with this homosexual agenda and using it as a weapon against traditional family unit, traditional community, et cetera. And at the same time playing the victim. And, it's interesting that, you know, coming out of NBC, there's this, an article, from the 6th, August 6th, and it says Boy Scouts of America had a pedophile epidemic and are hiding hundreds in its ranks, lawyers claim. The abused in scoutings, lawyers say they've identified 350 predator scout masters and represent 800 victims. Now, for those who follow my show, you know that I was a Boy Scout. I was an Eagle Scout. I was a senior patrol leader. I was assistant scout master. I went to Philmont. I was an Order of the Arrow Brotherhood member. My father was a scout master. He was a vigil member of Order of the Arrow. His awards in scouting, would fill a trophy case. And we both saw what they were doing first with feminism, you know, and you could see, after the Civil Rights Act of 1964, Civil Rights Act, that the Boy Scouts who had been, you had, segregated Boy Scout troops. You know, you could have a black Boy Scout group, and there were plenty of them. You had white Boy Scout groups, and you had Jewish Boy Scout groups. And during the 70s, they went through this whole change of integrating the scout troops and changing the dynamic of, instead of scouting being this, you know, a meritorious elitist group, you know, it's for the best and the best to achieve and learn not only independent survival skills, but also leadership skills. And that was the big thing of scouting, is you learn self-reliance, but you also learn leadership and how to act as a group and, you know, how to survive in various, you know, conditions, wilderness survival, et cetera. And also how to teach those things. It's, you know, like we say at the Breakfast Club, you see it, do it, teach it. And that was so much of scouting, is you would see the older kids do something and you say, I can do that. And then you do it and then you teach it. And it's like, you know, leveling up. Well, in the 70s, we went through this whole, we've got to heal the disenfranchised, the neglected of society, et cetera. And so they basically tried to take scouting and make it all inclusive. So it wasn't a system of the best anymore. It was basically everybody is welcome in this. So it lowered the standards of the program, both physically and mentally, and integrated everything. And that was the first part. Then they, you had the results of all these non-fault divorce cases, where divorce became very, very popular in the United States. So suddenly you had all these single moms wanting their sons to be in scouting, but they wanted to be leaders. And so you had all of this feminism moving into scouting and just basically tearing it apart, because they wanted everything changed from the way it had traditionally been into this inclusive, safe type environment, and to basically program those young men that they're bad, especially the white men, that you're bad and, you know, you've got to be more feminist, et cetera. And then they moved into, we have to allow homosexual scouts. That was the next big shift. And then once they had the homosexual scouts, then they said we need to include homosexual leaders, right? And again, this was never designed to work. They knew it would tear it apart. That was the point. They do not want Boy Scouts to exist. Boy Scouts goes against everything that these New World Order types think of. They want you to be a dependent slave, a worker bee, a drone bee, a sexless androgynous entity working for this global elite. And so this idea of independence and self-reliance and confidence is anathema to a slave master. And so this bringing in of feminism, or first diversity, then feminism, and then homosexuality, has done probably irreparable damage to the Boy Scout program. And it's just, it's so sad for me to watch, because I love scouting. You know, it's just, I like scouting like it was. And I don't go anywhere near it anymore, because I just think they are going the wrong way. They have lost their direction. And when you look at the history of why this happened, you look at things like the United Way. This was a way of fourth generation warfare using the power of the purse. You know, Boy Scouts relied on funding. And so the United Way said, convinced everybody that, oh, instead of donating to the Boy Scouts directly, donate to us, and we will spread it around to all these worthy charity groups. And so this idea of having a central depository of money, and then some, okay, we should be back. I tried to bring the fetch in. He called in, and he said that it's getting late there, and the bandwidth is clearing up, and so he was able to call in, and I thought I had brought him in, but I guess I didn't do it quite properly, but I was able to hear him fine, so I'm sorry you all got dead air there, but he sends his regards. I offered to let him take the last hour of the show, but he said I could go ahead and finish, and hopefully he'll be back on Thursday. But again, he sends his regards and apologies that he wasn't able to do the show today. So anyway, we were talking before the break about, you know, the Boy Scout before I dropped out there about the Boy Scouts. And so, you know, this article about the pedophile epidemic, you know, this is what they want. So when I go out in the community and I'm talking to young parents who have children school are of the age to go into scouting, and I ask them if they're going to put their children into scouting, they usually look at me with a sense of horror. Now it's like, you know, why would I do that? You know, no, we're going to let them play soccer or baseball or, you know, martial arts or whatever, or band, et cetera, but not put them in scouting. And this is also part of the poisoning the well tactic of, you discredit a once reputable institution to push people away from it, so that, you know, your good people aren't going to be there. And what you end up having in scouting a lot of times is children that are, quote, at risk. And it's basically, you know, they've already been through juvenile court, and the judge says, well, you get in a scouting program and turn yourself around, or you're going to, you know, juvenile hall type thing. And that was one of the programs I worked with in the 70s, one of the pilot programs of that, where we formed a test troop and through one of the Baptist churches. And this was, you know, in the, like 77, and it was, the diversity troop. And I found out much later that the three of the black, scouts that were in the troop that just caused so much trouble and was just impossible to do the standard procedure or the standard program with them. They just, you know, did not have the mental abilities or the emotional abilities. I spent my whole time just basically breaking up fights that they were starting, and found out later that, you know, they were sent there by the courts. And, you know, I was supposed to do something with these, you know, inner city poor black youth that were, you know, just in this criminal mindset. And I'm trying to make Boy Scouts of them. And all they're doing is trying to tear down everything we're working towards. You know, and just constantly getting in my face saying that, you know, you're white, and, you know, I don't have to do what you say because I'm not your slave. You know, and one of them was much bigger than I was. And, you know, it was constantly this battle of just dominance of, you know, trying to, you know, say we have a hierarchy of leadership. And, you know, their mindset was you listen to whoever, you know, is the toughest and, you know, the natural thug leader, you know, who's the most vicious, scariest person, that's who, you know, is in charge. And because if, you know, you don't listen to them, they'll bust your head. And so it's just that mentality is what, you know, I had to work with. And it was interesting that once I left to go to university, that program completely collapsed and that everybody abandoned it. So I just thought that was very, you know, my personal experience, and then I see what's happening with the Boy Scouts, and I know that these people are just laughing about it, that, you know, they you know, set this up, and like we were saying, the UN or the United Way were the ones pushing all of these agendas, saying we have the power of the purse, and you have to, you know, now do this, or we'll withhold your funding. It's up to you. You can do whatever you want. And so all of these churches and, you know, youth centers would go along with the program so they wouldn't lose their funding. And so, again, that this is now epidemic, as they say, is exactly what the end game was. They wanted to destroy Boy Scouts. Now, moving on to, you know, the other aspect of this, of, you know, getting into the Pizzagate, Jeffrey Epstein, Mossad operation of the sex slave and the Nexium group. Curiosity, we are up to the 9th New York Police Department police officer dying by, quote, suicide this year. And the mayor speaks out. And this is coming from ABC 7 out of New York. And this was Thursday, August 15th. And it says, for the 9th time this year, a New York City police officer has died by suicide. The veteran off-duty officer died of a self-inflicted gunshot wound at his home in Laurelton, Queens on Wednesday evening. Sources say the officer's wife and two children, ages 18 and 11, heard a shot, ran to see what it was, and found him. He was taken to North Shore at the University Hospital, where he was pronounced dead. The 56-year-old officer had 25 years on the job. So it's like, why are all of these police officers and people that are very connected to that New York power system where so much of this activity was going on, why are they all suddenly committing suicide or being suicided? And again, it goes back to the Jeffrey Epstein, you know, were they, did they commit suicide or were they suicided because they knew too much? And one of the things I always say, you know, police are there to do one of two things. They're either there to get to the truth or they're there to cover up the truth. This is that checkered board nature of that layer 5 in our Babylonian model, the beta layer, the copper layer. You know, that's why they call them coppers, you know, coppers associated with the 5th planet, Venus or Lucifer. And, you know, so that's the slang for a police officer, is the copper, wearing that badge, that 5-pointed star usually. And it's always associated with that checkerboard, that Masonic checkerboard. And so it's either you're there to get to the bottom of the truth, bring the guilty to justice, or you're there to cover up the truth and also possibly to be part of a false flag operation to pin the blame on a patsy. This is, yeah, that scapegoating part of a false flag operation where you're trying to get something going. So you set it up, problem, reaction, solution. You do 9/11 to start a war. You do the Gulf of Tonkin to start a war. You do the Maine to start a war. And So it's very interesting that all of these police officers, they have 9 police officers in a matter of months.
Listen, this is just,
I'm very, very curious. Somebody like Jeffrey Epstein. We're talking over the break. So anyway, we'll be back in just a second. All right, and we're back. You're listening to Inside the Eye Live with Mr. Dennis Fetcho. I'm your guest host, Frederick C. Blackburn, filling in today. Mr. Fetcho was not able to get a good connection from the Philippines to do the show today. He did call in last hour, and unfortunately, I wasn't able to I thought I had it connected right, so I was hearing him fine, but unfortunately, I think I just put the studio feed on hold and was talking to him, so it was nice chatting with him. He was doing well, and send his regards to the chat room and all the people listening, and hopefully we'll have him back on Thursday. Before the break, we were talking about this LGBT PC agenda and how it has become weaponized to destroy all of these existing systems. And another example of this came out of Huffington Post, echo, on the 11th of August. And it says, Illinois governor signs bill mandating public schools teach LGBTQ history. The measure is being praised as a life-saving law and has placed the state on the right side of history. And this is from writer Amy Rousseau, if you're familiar with her work. She's a total social justice warrior. Facts don't matter. Says, starting next year, Illinois public schools will be required by law to include LGBTQ history in their curriculum. On Friday, Governor J.B. Pritzker, who is a Democrat, signed House Bill 246, which mandates that the subject be taught as of July 1st, 2020. It says the measure stipulates that students must study the roles and contributions of lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender people in the history of this country and this state. The bill also includes similar mandates for African American history and that of various other groups, including Polish, Irish, Italian, Hispanic, and Asian Americans. So here, it's part of that cultural Marxist agenda to normalize the abnormal. It's like, this is just another identity group. It's just like saying I'm Irish or I'm English or I'm French to say I'm LGBTQPC. And that is not the case. And my complaint with laws like this is the same thing I'm seeing in the educational systems here being taught at universities like the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill, Appalachian State University, North Carolina State University, et cetera, where they say they want history taught, but you're not allowed to teach the full history. And so you're not allowed in these programs to give the realities of how much sexual abuse there is in this system compared to traditional family unit heterosexual systems. You're not allowed to talk about the rate of STD diseases, sexually transmitted diseases in this community. You're not allowed to talk about the amount of abuse in these systems. And so all these facts, how unstable these systems are, how promiscuous these systems are, and what the lifetime, long range life quality of life for people in these systems really is. It's just like, the Holocaust. They say we have to have Holocaust education in all these schools, but if you actually try to go in and point out facts, even bringing up things like the Jewish boycott of 1933, that is considered hate speech. It's like, this is a fact in history. The Jews threw the first punch by declaring war on Germany. The Germans were up against the Bolshevik Revolution coming to Germany. They had been totally, done over by the Treaty of Versailles. And side note there, shout out to The Invisible Critic, if you're not familiar with tomatobubble.com, the anti-New York Times site hosted by Mr. Mike King, who has just done incredible work. If you're not familiar with his line of books on real history, definitely do yourself a favor and go out and research Mr. Mike King at tomatobubble.com. One of his offerings on YouTube and BitChute is a series called The Invisible Critic, and he's doing a sub-series now on hidden history. And the recent episode is episode 19, The Forbidden History of Globalism, where he covers 1918 to 1920. And he shows where, you know, all of these things were being set up during this time against Germany after World War I. And talks about what it was like under Weimar Germany and how they brought in all of the same degeneracy, which, you know, it's degeneracy from a Western civilization standpoint. But if you study the Talmud and you study the Kabbalah and the Zohar and the inner workings of all these esoteric things, you realize this is their model. You know, for example, in the Talmud, you have the six sexualities symbolized by that, you know, abomination of a rainbow flag that, you know, it's not the right colors. Even that is unnatural. So, you know, they kind of say, we know this is unnatural, but this is just it. And, you know, then they try to say these six sexualities exist, and therefore, we have to be all-inclusive, but at the same time, you're looking at this inner circle of Jews who say, under our law for Jews, though, this, you know, it's bad. You know, we don't tolerate this at this level, but all these other levels we do. And so it's just this crazy making of double standards and situational ethics. Oh, yeah, that's part of the pill pull. It's just, you know, you win the argument no matter what you have to argue. The next day you completely argue something different. That's just the mindset. So here, you know, it's like we need to have inclusiveness and accept homosexuality, et cetera. But it's, you know, being weaponized to destroy Western civilization. And, you know, it's the fascinating, the parallels between what Germany went through after World War I and what we're seeing in the U.S. now. And again, you know, get a chance, go out and watch that series of Forbidden History of Globalism. And like I said, The Invisible Critic's up to episode 19. But, you know, this Illinois governor is saying, you know, we've got to teach this, but they won't let you teach it in full. You know, there's a thumb on this scale of equality. You know, it would be one thing if you could actually analyze this system truthfully, but they won't let you. So this is when you move from truth to just propaganda and brainwashing of children. And, you know, they've talked about this for a long time. In this week's show, you know, we were talking about public education in the United States after World War II. Between World War II and the Korean War, and that it was all about this globalist model that you had to teach the students globalism, and you had to remove all of Christianity and all of patriotism out of the school systems and gear it towards this new world order of a one world government type of system. And so they've been, you know, working on this for a long time. You know, listeners of this show, I'm sure, are familiar with things like the Fabian Society and, you know, in addition to all the secret societies like the Illuminati, but, you know, the Council on Foreign Relations, the Trilateral Commission, all these NGO think tanks, non-government organization think tanks that are dictating policy and implementing policy outside of government systems with no government accountability or oversight. That's the thing about NGO groups. You know, you didn't elect them, but they are actively working in your communities to destroy them. You know, they weren't elected to office. You have no real accountability over their policies and procedures. And so they are this nebulous group out there that is, you know, taking control of all these systems and mandating these type of laws. And it's interesting that in Russia during the Bolshevik Revolution, there's actually a demon word, you know, to demonize people that stood against these agendas. And one of the transitions was, you know, the counter-revolutionaries were labeled, you know, criminal, but later they would use the thing, they're insane. If you went against any of the teachings of the Central Committee of the party and you didn't see that the ends justify the means and we're going in the right directions, they would declare you mentally ill. And they actually made up this term to specify these counter-revolutionary types having mental illness, and it was called sluggish schizophrenia. Sluggish schizophrenia, look it up, and it says is a diagnostic category used in the Soviet Union to describe what was claimed to be a form of schizophrenia characterized by a slowly progressive course. It was diagnosed even in patients who showed no other symptoms of schizophrenia or psychotic disorders on the assumption that these symptoms would appear later. It was developed in the 1960s by the Soviet psychiatrist Andrei Snevetsky, echo, 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 and his colleagues, and was used exclusively in the USSR and several Eastern Bloc countries until the fall of communism in starting in 1989. The diagnostics has long been discredited because of its scientific inadequacy and its use as a means of confining dissenters. It was never used or recognized outside the Soviet Union or by any international organization such as the World Health Organization. It is considered a prime example of the political abuse of psychiatry in the Soviet Union. So it says, you know, psychiatric diagnostics such as sluggish schizophrenia were used in the USSR for political purposes. And, but basically, you know, any type of questioning the reality of what you were being taught by the propaganda engines was, you know, a sign that you had this. And this is where I'm afraid we're headed with the red flag laws in the wake of these recent shootings. You know, obviously these shootings were very synthetic, that happened, you know, week before last, but this idea of not only having red flag laws, but preemptive crime laws, you know, pre-crime, where using artificial intelligence, monitoring people to say they may be a potential problem, so we need to go ahead and act now before they do something. So any type of talk of supporting the Constitution, supporting science, supporting you know, real history with all the facts, well, that is a sign of mental illness. And so you see that the Jewish media is really in overtime trying to take people like me who just want the truth and the facts out there and for people to follow the rule of law, you know, as written, as designed in this constitutional republic, as not only, you know, mentally ill, but also criminally mentally ill as being a white supremacist, a white nationalist, you know, neo-Nazi, you know, the list goes on and on of these demon words, you know, that this person's bad, you know, they should be punished. And this idea of turning the mob against that person. And so we're just seeing the same cookie cutter rolling out in Western countries, especially in the United States, of this idea of using the so-called medical industry to avert crime before it happens. An example, you know, of this type of cultural policing by these nebulous groups that are outside of the law trying to dictate policy. And you think, you know, this is what the ADL does and the SPLC, you know, the Anti-Defamation League, the Southern Poverty Law Center, and, you know, the NAACP. is they try to dictate policy, but you know, they aren't elected. They're not accountable, but yet they are this incredible power system. And I would put IPAC, you know, the so-called American Israeli Political Action Committee, but there's nothing American in it. It's all about Jewish interests and Israeli interests. And you know, they have incredible power over our government and at every level. And you know, you've got all these little CNM out there looking for somebody like me that they can report and escalate and get the ADL involved. So the ADL comes in and shuts you down. And the, they have all these press releases about how the ADL and the SPLC are working closely with social media companies to wipe out hate, you know, end hate for good. I love that slogan. It's like, how crazy making is that, that the ADL, who claims the moral, ethical, and intellectual high ground that was founded to basically protect a, you know, Jew, Leo Frank, who raped and murdered a child, you know, that that is all anti-Semitic, what happened to him, because it basically violated Talmudic law. We used U.S. law and state law to execute a Jew when Talmudically, no law was broken. That's what you got to get your head around. Is there are 613 laws, mitzvahs. You know, that's totally legal. And you know, there was no crime there. Even trying to frame the black man for the crime, there's no crime there. And so this idea that, you know, Goyim law trumped Jewish law was just incomprehensible to this group of Jewish supremacists. And so the ADL has found it to make sure it never happens again. And they've been playing whack-a-goyim ever since. And just, you know, anybody who dares try to name the Jew or show Jewish power or show the agenda is immediately labeled and doxed and has their life destroyed. At the same time, you know, the ADL just cloaks themselves like the SPLC in this, you know, cloak of we have the moral, ethical, and intellectual high ground on all matters. We are the politrucks. We are the commissars, you know, of the world. And they're trying to enforce their worldview. And so this article is coming out of Fox News 59 out of Bloomington, and it says the Bloomington Farmers Market to reopen with changes Saturday after 2 week closure. And so if you haven't been following the story, this is an example of a group of social justice warriors that identified white people at a community market that were white identitarians. They say, you know, we see what's going on. And looking at white interests, right? Well, they were immediately labeled neo-Nazis, haters, etc. And this got escalated to the Antifa groups out there who came in and started causing troubles. Well, the good Democratic mayor out there with his Jewish communications officer basically put the blame on the people at the farmers market that weren't doing anything and never even looked in the direction of the Antifa groups that were causing the trouble. And so they shut down this farmer's market because Antifa was causing trouble. And now they said they are reopening it after 2 weeks. And this is, the city, it says, the city says the market was temporarily closed due to the rising tensions at the event and information identifying risks of specific individuals with connection to past white nationalist violence. So here, you know, that putting those control words in there, that white nationalism is being associated with violence. They're demonizing anybody who believes in the Constitution and happens to be white, who believes that, you know, you have a right to live in a white, safe community, a high trust community. You have a right not to be invaded by people who want you dead and destroyed. What a radical concept, right? And it goes on, it says, Since announcing the closure on July 29th, city officials say they have met with members of the community to hear their concerns and suggestions about dealing with hate groups and bigotry. So basically, a hate group and a bigotry is anybody who doesn't go along with this New World Order, you know, agenda of, you know, total inclusiveness, and it's basically weaponizing everybody against the existing system, just like Saul Alinsky says. And it says, the market will open at its regular time and place, 8 a.m. to 1 p.m. at Showers Common, but will include some new aspects. Cameras to monitor the site will enhance safety. Two public streets will be closed to traffic during market hours to create a larger comfort zone for the market crowd. You know, again, this idea of safe space and comfort zones and gun-free zones, this is all cultural Marxism. The presence of police and other professional public safety officers will be increased. Now, that's kind of telling, because one of the trends we're seeing is all of these local Jewish police agencies and popping up in these towns. They call them the Shlomas. I can't remember the exact term, but basically to protect the Jewish community. And they actually have their own little police cars and ambulances for Jews only. And so now this idea of these social justice warriors out there monitoring that, you know, have no real authority. They have just assumed authority and are now running basically the same gameplay as the commissars and the politrics of the Bolsheviks. New market ambassadors, volunteers with experience and commitment to the market, will welcome folks back and be visible embodiments of the inclusive spirit. If you'd like to join these market boosters, please let us know. And then new signage will clearly indicate areas designated for flyering and expression and publicized market rules. In other words, you know, they're trying to shut down the First Amendment. They didn't like what people were saying in some of their flyers and handouts that people were handing out at this market, because it went against their agenda. But yet, you know, all these other groups are free to put out their propaganda. So it's that double standard. And one of the things we always talk about at the Breakfast Club is the litmus test for any master-slave system is the double standard. So you can put out Antifa propaganda. You can put out LGBTQ propaganda. You can put out Black Lives Matter, La Raza, you know, all these other, you know, systems. But if you dare say anything about patriotism or white communities or Christianity, that is hate speech, and that has to be shut down. Also, just anything exposing what's going on is considered hate speech. And so it's just fascinating. This is the same thing that's going on. And so anyway, we're going into a break, and so we'll be back in just a second. See you on the other side. All right, we are back. You are listening to Inside the Eye Live with Mr. Dennis Fecho. I'm your guest host, Mr. Frederick Blackburn, a.k.a. Blackbird 9. I'd like to thank everyone for joining us today on this Saturday, spending your Saturday with me. Sorry the Fetch couldn't make a connection. He gave it the definite college try. I have to give him that. But he did call in last hour and gave his regards to everyone. And hopefully we'll have him back Thursday night for Inside the Eye Live primetime. A few other stories hitting today. Coming out of the UK, this is from the UK Telegraph, and it says the Brexit endgame is underway and constitutional crisis has never looked more likely. So if you were following social media this week, you saw that there was a big push in the UK about Brexit. And this article says that senior figures are plotting to thwart Boris Johnson and whatever endeavor he has in mind. Even in the depths of August, the Brexit endgame is beginning to take shape, and Downing Street and across Whitehall, officials are chained to their desk working out a strategy for reviving talks with the EU are planning for a no-deal withdrawal if Brussels continues to resist negotiations with the new government. So it's going to be really interesting to see with this new prime minister if he is going to move with the Brexit movement or if he's going to move against them. You know, he has already made it clear of his Jewish loyalties, his Israeli loyalties. And if you look at that end game, it's, yeah, that is the EU. And that's part of the Zionist movement that people don't understand. You know, it looked like Zionism was just about establishing a homeland in the Middle East for the Jews. That's how it was marketed. That, oh, we just want part of Palestine for us. And then we want peace. We want a piece more of Palestine. We want a piece of Syria. We want a piece of Jordan. We want a piece of, you know, Lebanon, Saudi, Egypt. You know, what they want is from the Nile to the Euphrates for greater Israel. That's the end game. But the other aspect that's not talked about is that from there, they will rule the world in this new world order under Talmudic Noahide law. And this is what the European Union was all about. Just like the Soviet Union, it was a way of dividing the planet up into these various Soviets under central Jewish control and merging all the peoples of the world into this Kalergi mongrel man of the future, as he put it, and destroying all nation states. And when you look at that, you know, EU flag, you know, those 12 stars represent the 12 tribes of Israel. This is a complete Jewish Zionist movement to turn Europe into another Soviet. And Brexit is a way for the UK to exit out of it. But we know how much power that the Jewish, you know, Rothschilds in the City of London, et cetera, and World Jewry have over the UK. So this is going to be a, you know, an uphill battle for the Brexit crew, because it's like, you know, no matter what the vote is, will the EU acknowledge it? Will the people in government acknowledge it? So definitely watching these developments under this new administration and the Brexit movement. Speaking of double standards, this is what a funny story from this week. If you're not familiar with the so-called comedian Sarah Silverman, Echo, 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 she's notorious for, you know, making fun of white people, especially Christians. That's all she does is mock everything to do with white culture, Christianity, etc. She has one so-called comedy bit where she laughs about how she hopes the Jews did kill Jesus because she would do it again in a heartbeat, right? And so this idea of I can say anything I want and I'm protected under the First Amendment, that kind of mentality. And that, you know, she should not suffer any repercussion. But at the same time, she is quick to shut down anybody like me who says anything that she doesn't approve of. You know, it's just amazing how she's always out there trying to demonize and shut down people who disagree with her worldview, right? So it's just that pill pull mindset of just a total double standard. And the comedy here is she announced that she was, this is coming out of Gateway Pundit, it says Sarah Silverman fired from new movie over old blackface pic. And so it was interesting to see all of these Jews talking about how evil all these white people were who got exposed of having old photos like at Halloween, et cetera, of them in blackface. And you know, it's such a double standard because anybody who knows the real history of blackface knows it's a Jewish thing. You know, this is the early day of vaudeville, et cetera, especially early films like The Jazz Singer. You know, that was about, you know, Jews wearing blackface to mock black people as comedy. But yet, you know, it's that idea of projection. You always project your sins onto the scapegoat, which is, you know, the white people. So here, Sarah Silverman was recently fired from a movie over an old picture of her in blackface. And she says, back in 2007, Sarah Silverman wore blackface in a sketch for the Sarah Silverman Show and is now coming back to haunt her. Silverman complained about the cancel culture, which started by lefty social justice warriors, but she wasn't happy now that the left is having to play by their own rules. Quote, I think it's scary and it's a very odd thing that it's invaded the left primarily, and the right will mimic it. And she calls this righteousness porn. If it's like, if you're not on board, if you say the wrong thing, if you had a tweet once, everyone is like throwing the first stone. It's so odd. It's perversion. It's really, look how righteous I am. And now I'm going to press refresh all day long to see how many likes I get in my righteousness. And so this is just that, you know, crazy making of dealing with these people that, you know, they can say one thing one day in that situational ethics, and the next day they have converted, flipped their argument 180 degrees and are just as self-righteous with that argument. And so this idea that it's not fair that she is being judged for something she did as comedy, but if somebody else does it, that's not comedy, that's hate speech. You know, so you just have these crazy making double standards. So I just thought that was a particularly interesting turn of events. And news coming out late last night, this is coming out of MSN news, and one of those archetypes of the 60s counterculture, Peter Fonda, who starred in, this is, you know, Jane Fonda's brother and Henry Fonda's son, Peter Fonda, who I guess is probably best known for his role in Easy Rider, the classic, you know, 60s film about the man who went out to find America and couldn't find it anywhere. So this was such a demoralizing film when it came out. It was complete psychological warfare, pushing that counterculture narrative, attacking everything to do with traditional American values. And of course, we all thought it was great, and it was so edgy at the time, and it had the great soundtrack, you know, the album that we all bought the album. And so anyway, Peter Fonda, two-time Oscar nominee and star of Easy Rider, dies at 79. Peter Fonda, the two-time Oscar-nominated star of Easy Rider, and more recently films such as Yuli's Gold and the remake of 310 to Yuma, has died, his manager confirmed, and he was 79. Fonda was part of a family of Hollywood royalty, the son of old Hollywood star Henry Fonda and the brother to Jane Fonda, as well as the father of Bridget Fonda. His rise in the 60s was emblematic of the counterculture of the era. Quote, it's one of the saddest moments of our lives. We are not able to find the appropriate words to express the pain in our hearts as we grieve. We ask you to respect our privacy, the family said in a statement to People magazine. So it's interesting that, you know, these people are considered, you know, in such high regards by the Jewish media and that empire of their own of Hollywood. And basically, when you look at the history of Henry Fonda and Peter Fonda and realize just how in bed they were with this Bolshevik, you know, global communist movement to destroy the nations and destroy all the morality of the culture, you know, why are these people considered, you know, in such high regard? Still, and it's just that Jews putting out there, you know, these are the, you know, the righteous Gentiles, the Shabbat Goy out there that, you know, push the agenda along. And it's interesting that this is happening at the same time they're really pushing this anniversary of Woodstock. And just, you know, public television here is completely Jewish dominated here in North Carolina. I found out the hard way when I tried to get them to air material from the 9/11 Truth Movement, from Architects and Engineers from 9/11 Truth, and basically got the tribal treatment. So I will never, ever donate to North Carolina Public Television ever again. But you know, they're just really pushing this, you know, counterculture 60s as it was some kind of cultural high mark, that Woodstock was this cultural high mark of society. And you know, you realize that, you know, this was fourth generation warfare targeting the youth to turn the youth against the systems of the parents and, you know, lead them down this path of the New World Order, et cetera, without ever telling them the end game, that this will be the end of you. There is no place for white Europeans in the New World Order. And you had these people like Peter Fonda and Jane Fonda and Henry Fonda out there pushing this, and everyone is so mesmerized with Hollywood, you still are sold these people as they were great icons of American culture. And it's like, no, they were icons of that empire of their own Jewish culture that was trying to destroy the great experiment from day one and replace it with the great work. So I thought that was interesting. Now, the last little bit here, like I always try to have a card trick for everybody when I guest host for The Fetch. So we're going to do a card trick here, the last little bit of the show. And if you caught the show last Thursday, I guest host for the ITEL primetime show, and I was continuing to show how you went from a deck of playing cards, the standard American poker deck, 52 cards of, you know, you got ace through 10, then jack, queen, king with four suits, your suits being spades, clubs, hearts, and diamonds, and showed how those 52 cards lay out in our seven-layer Babylon model. And then I moved that over to the chessboard and showed how those seven layers of the cards are mapped out in the chess pieces. And then how the a die, you know, single of dice, six-sided die, you see that seven layers hidden. You have the one through six that you can see, and then the trick is that if you look at the side facing you and then add it to the side you can't see or the side that's occulted, they always add up to seven, and that gives you that 777. 6 + 1 = 7, 5 + 2 = 7, 4 + 3 = 7. So that's the 777 hidden layer. And then the alpha layer 6, the beta layer 5, the gamma layer 4, the epsilon layer, no, the delta layer 3, the epsilon layer 2, and then the zeta layer 1. And then we showed how the chessboard itself can be used to map out the eye of Horus or the eye of Ra or the eye of Re, and that this is that Illuminati symbol in the triangle, that Eye of Horus, and that each one of those parts of the eye represents a fraction of the chessboard. And remember, there are in an 8x8 chessboard has 64 squares. And so if you take the first half, you take the whole, you divide it in half, so you take 32, that's represented by one part of that eye of Ra. And if you do a search on Wadjet, it's easy to see with the visual there. It's kind of hard for somebody to describe it without the visual, but you know, each part of that eye represents a fraction. So you take the half, 32, and then you take a half of that, which is 16, and then a half of that, which is 8, and then a half of that's 4, and then a half of that was, you know, the 2, and then half of that is the 1. And this also gives you the golden spiral. You know, if you map that out of the, you know, the golden rectangle, excuse me, you know, how you get that spiral off of that golden rectangle. Well, last week I showed how you can also use that checkerboard as a calendar for that old matriarchal lunar system based on 28 days with 13 months, and that every 4 years you would have to have special days, add 5 days to the calendar to reset it. And this was symbolized by the pattern of Venus. And one of the interesting things about the planet Venus is, as seen from Earth, it appears to map out a five-pointed pentagram star over a four-year cycle, then disappear behind the sun and show up on the other side, and over a four-year cycle maps out a inverted pentagram and then goes back to the other side, and this is an infinity cycle. So you have that 4- and 8-year cycle of Venus. So the chessboard we saw maps out the 28 days in the week, 13-month year, and then a 4-year, 8-year cycle. So what we're going to talk about now is how to expand that chessboard to the next layer. And so when you think of the 52 cards in the playing deck, you have 52 weeks of the year. So one of the tricks is to take the chessboard, which is 8x8, but then you expand that out and keep adding layers. So you add in the next layer, which gives you a 10x10 checkerboard, then a 12x12, and then a 14x14 checkerboard. And this gives you 7 layers. Why is that 7 so important? Well, in the early days of the calendars, and you had these people, the Sumerians and previous cultures, that noticed that you had a pole star, which at the time back then wasn't Polaris, it was Draconis in the constellation of Draco, but that pole star is what the stars all rotate around when seen from the Earth. So you had all these orderly stars, these constellations that never changed. They just rotated around like they were attached to a sphere surrounding the Earth. But there were these 7 free-willed planets that seemed to do whatever they wanted to do. That they weren't attached to that system. So you had the pole star, all the constellations, and then the signs of the zodiac, the great belt of the zodiac that rotated throughout the year and always stayed in the same order, never moved. They would just, progress through the year. And, during the winter, you would see them with one pattern, and during the summer, you would see them another pattern, but they always stayed the same. This is also where we get the ancient symbol of the swastika in a 4-season culture. Above the equator, above the Tropic of Cancer, you would see the Big Dipper rotating around the pole star and show the 4 seasons. So you would go from spring to summer to fall to winter back to spring, and that's that old symbol of the swastika around the pole star showing the 4 seasons of culture. This is very important to Europeans that developed calendar technology very early on. Equatorial people, the environment never changed. It wasn't that important. But northern climes, you had to prepare food and store food for the winter. And then you knew the promise of the new year would be coming. And that is why the swastika is traditionally a symbol of hope and renewal. Well, that's why the powers that be, the meanies, they hate that symbol. It's the antithesis of their new world order. Well, so you have the moon. You have Mars, you have Mercury, you have Jupiter, you have Venus, you have the Saturn, and you have the Sun as the 7 free-willed planets. Well, the Sun, the first is the Moon. The Moon is probably the most easy pattern to recognize because it moves from new moon to first quarter to full moon to last quarter back to new moon. And so over a 28-day period, you see that pattern. So that was one of the earliest patterns to develop. And then you see that 13 of those cycles add up to a year. And so that's where the sun comes in, where the sun comes back to its normal position at the spring equinox. It rises northward for the summer solstice and then falls back to the middle for the autumn equinox and then goes down south for the winter solstice. You know, so you see that pattern of the sun, and then you see the 4-year, 8-year cycle of Venus. The other four planets are completely random. This is where you have retrograde motion, etc. But if you take that chessboard and expand it out and add the rest of the seven layers, you see at the center you have the 2x2. That's that 4-year, 8-year cycle of Venus. And then the 4x4 gives you the 12 months. But remember the Ouroboros we talked about where it has the crown. So that gives you your 13 months. Then we move out to the 6x6, which if you count around the perimeter, gives you the 20 spaces. And then the 8x8, which we were talking about, gives you your 28 days. That's your lunar cycle of 28 days around the regular chessboard. Well, if you then add another sphere out, another layer out on that chessboard, 10 by 10, and you count around the perimeter, you'll see that you get the number 36. And 36 is that number of perfection because it is 6 times 6. Okay? Then you move out the next layer, and also it associates the 10 of the Decalogue, the 10 laws of 10 commandments of Moses, the tetrix, it's like in bowling, you have the 10 pins. That pyramid pattern is very, very significant to all these esoteric systems of the 10, and that relates the 10 to the 36, which relates it to the 6. Then you add out another layer, layer 6, 12 by 12 gives you a 44 perimeter. And then at the last, if you expand it out 14 by 14, and remember 14, 7 times 2, checkerboards 2, black and white, so 7 times 2 is 14, 14 by 14, if you count around that perimeter, that gives you your 52, so that's your 52 weeks of the year using a checkerboard by bringing it out, expanding the 8x8 checkerboard or chessboard to 7 layers. And again, so you have a 2x2, a 4x4, 6x6, 8x8, 10x10, 12x12, and 14x14. So with that said, you've been listening to Inside the Eye Live, Mr. Dennis Fetcho. I'm your guest host, Frederick C. Blackburn. I'd like to thank you all for having me and appreciate Revolution Radio having me. And until next time, I will see you all at the rendezvous.